Hello and welcome to the Death of the Roman Republic.
Netflix review of the 2005 HBO original series, Rome.
All right, penultimate episode of HBO's Rome. In English, no god can stop a hungry man. Taking our lead in hosting duties today is going to be Jacob. Jacob, do you want to tackle the Latin pronunciation and give that your best?
I have it written down. I sure do. Deus impedicio est retori nullus.
All right. I'm not going to dispute that.
No god can stop a hungry man. Like, no god can stop me from starting this episode. Are you ready, gentlemen?
I'm ready for to get excited about the woman of your dreams.
You're gross. You're disgusting. Okay. We open on Varinus lying in bed. His home bed, maybe? With woman? Niobe. Lying in bed with Niobe. He gently wakes her up and they share a kiss. And then, quote-unquote, Niobe starts speaking in this devilish tone and foreign language, and her face transforms into that of a completely different person. And then we realize it's an Egyptian prostitute.
I would like to say this devil language you referred to was most likely just her speaking Egyptian.
Okay. He didn't say devil language. No. He said devil tone.
Yes, I wrote tone specifically because her voice is weird when it starts and her voice does normalize. And it was probably just Egyptian the whole time. Then we move to Varinus. He's getting on his like legionnaire garb on as he's walking the streets of Egypt. He enters the castle. Pasca's there. Pasca's like kind of dressed Egyptian. He's smoking. It must be his day off or something. Pasca's like, it's for my nerves, I swear. Varinus is looking for Antony. Pasca's like, he's in the throne room. He's meeting a delegation from the Senate. And Pasca's like, I'm not there because I value my life. Cleopatra growls at me. I retreat. Who would look after my wife? He loves Jocasta so much. It's lovely. Cut to the throne room. This is lovely. This is great. A servant is dressed as a deer. And Antony is showing Cleopatra how he would hunt a deer, but also like seductively. Go ahead, Cole.
I just want to immediately say funniest moment of the episode. Just like
this, it rules.
This poor guy.
I was trying to get to this a few seconds ago, but you were going super fast, Jacob. Actress that played the prostitute, I read this on the IMDb page for Rome. She shaved her head, and she was only on set for this episode for this one scene for one day, and so she shaved her head for one day of filming.
I'd do that. Not that impressive.
Yeah, for Kevin McKinney, you would.
Oh, absolutely. So Antony's like seductively showing Cleopatra how he would shoot this deer, and like he looks at her and they maybe start kissing for a second, and then this man dressed as a deer acts very much the part. He's like, oh, I can drink the water now. And Antony immediately recognizes and shoots him in the armor, so he's fine. The guy's fine. Then Cleopatra starts taking shots as the senators stand by, unenthused, just watching this happen. They're here to talk about the grain supply. Meanwhile, Cleopatra is missing the deer badly. As it turns out, the people in Rome are really hungry and dying in the streets and starving. And it's because Antony's been slowing the grain from getting to Rome. And so the senators who are there, they're like, hey, we'll double what we're paying you. And Cleopatra's like, triple. And also, give Antony Carthage. And they're like, you know what? That we might actually be able to do that. We can probably make that happen. They get into this small thing about, oh, they're like, oh, Octavian wants to write by the people. Anthony's like, it doesn't matter what Octavian does. The people always like me more. And they seem to have a deal. But as the senators are leaving, Anthony's like, also, I want to have Spain. And they're like, you can't have Spain. You're crazy. That's not happening. No way. And as the senators protest, Cleopatra finally hits the deer, but not in armor. The deer, I should say. It is still a person.
Yeah, this is a man.
It's the deer in the neck, and he bleeds out and dies on the floor, and Antony and Cleopatra walk over him and leave, and Varinus takes the senators to their quarters.
A couple things to note here. Varinus's observations, not batting an eye too much, is a little bit concerning. In terms of dress and garb, you know, Cleopatra's kind of walking around in a bikini top that has spikes on it, which is...
scantily clad is
a little
like
odd. Antony as well, dressed in the Egyptian style like Pasca. The entire time they're doing these negotiations, quote unquote, Cleopatra and Antony are like constantly making out and foreplaying.
It's heavy petting for sure.
You mentioned how Varinus's lack of reaction is kind of alarming. I think that he's just very desensitized to all this because it is very clear that a lot of time has passed. I believe it's been like 7 years or something like that.
Well, yeah, we'll get the first indication of that.
Yeah, I would say it's very clear because I didn't realize until a bit later.
Yeah, it's only 2 weeks.
It's like they've just fully gone off the rails immediately.
Mm-hmm. So Antony and Cleopatra retire to their room, and Antony declares, in what is news to us, if that doesn't make him declare war, I don't know what will. So it turns out Antony wants to start a war with Octavian. Cleopatra's like, well, maybe you can start the war first. And Antony protests. He's like, I'm not going to start a war against my own people. I'm returning to Rome as a savior, not a conqueror. And he says he's tired, and he closes his eyes, goes to bed, and two children enter. We learn their names are Helios and Selene, and we learned through Cleopatra's dialogue that they are Antony's children. So there we go. Some amount of time has passed because these are either siblings, the one's younger, one older, or they're at least twins, and they're at least like 5 years old. They're walking around on their own. So some time has passed. So then we cut back to Rome. We cut to Gaia in bed with none other than our dear friend Titus Pullo, and there's some commotion outside, some rioting. As we've been led to know, the people are starving, and they're begging the Collegia for food. Cole, go ahead.
I just want to say, I was kind of surprised that Pullo was, like, still running the Collegium. Like, I thought he kind of would have dipped. Yeah. Like, this, it never really felt like he was into this whole thing. He was just there because Varinus was his friend.
That could be enough goodwill to tie him over, though. You know, he's he's a man of faith when it comes to, I think, I don't know, his brotherhood.
Fair enough.
Just quick gut check from the moment seeing Gaia and Pullo in bed together after all this time. What was your guys' thoughts on that? Like, BP didn't like it. I mean,
oh god,
they had a good connection. I was like, oh okay, they might actually like be loving. This is fine. I was like, okay, if this is what's best for both of them, I'm with it. Pullo, he gets up, he gets dressed, and he kind of goes outside, moves to the crowd. He climbs to this outpost to deliver a speech as leader of the Collegia. He's basically like, hey, all the day's rations are gone. So y'all got to scram and quiet down. And there are people obviously don't like that. And he's like, hey, I know you're hungry, but you're alive. If I do as you ask and open the granaries, you'll be well fed today and hungry tomorrow. Well said, Pullo. Very wise. Mm-hmm. Maskius and the family meet him at the bottom. Much time. This is where time is notably passed. Lucius, the youngest, now speaks.
Baby Lucius is now like preteen Lucius.
Yeah, he's like at least 2 feet taller. Vrina the younger is slightly noticeably older. And Vrina the elder is now dressed in the garb of Lydie's sect. And our friend Maskius bears a scar over his eye and walks with crutches. He must have, I assume, earned those injuries in that battle we saw last episode.
Yeah, the one where Memmio died, as we all thought.
Yeah.
I liked Pullo's banter with Varinus's children, especially when he tells Lucius, go learn to read or something.
Oh, yeah, that was good. He's like, you shut up.
Inside the Collegia, Maskius informs Pullo that there's barely 10 days left of grain, so dire straits. But he does say the Baker's Guild is offering 600 for a sack. And Pullo's basically like, we're not doing that. We're not in this for profit. And Pullo's also feeding an unrecognizable man in a cage. We quickly learn it's Memmio. And they've just been keeping him in there since the battle. And he just like is feeding him a bone. And people are like, why are you keeping him alive? Which we now know is like for years he has been here like this.
Yeah. Memmio's like, he seems to have fully gone just like feral almost.
Yeah, he doesn't talk, maybe because his tongue got bitten out.
Well, yeah, probably.
Something that's also just, it's a really strange parallel to the first scene with Antony and Cleopatra, where the man is dressed up in the deer costume and how they're treating him like an animal and how Pullo is treating Memmio like an animal. It's just like there's this weird kind of contrast between how they see punishment.
Yeah. And yeah, he says we're keeping Memmio alive to send a message to everyone else. So, egads. We cut to Pullo reporting to Octavian just how dire the food situation is in Rome. Maecenas jokes about eating dogs. Octavian's basically like, there's not much we can do. Like, we have all the food we have. The only people who have food is the military, and we need to feed our troops. But Agrippa comes up with the idea, like, well, if we send a couple legions to Africa, Lepidus can feed them, and that'll free up some food for, like, the next 3 months. So they come up with something. And Octavian wants to know who the people are blaming for all this. And Pullo begrudgingly is like, well, they blame you. And Octavian's like, well, but even though the newsreader has like told them what's going on and Antony's slowing the shipments, Pullo's like, the people still love Antony. Antony's Antony and Octavian, you're Octavian. And that's never going to change in the people's perception. That's just how it is. Yeah, and Octavian reveals that he knows this delegation he sent will fail and that's not going to result in any food. And he knows he's sussed out Antony's game pretty well. He knows Antony either wants the people of Rome to rise against Octavian or to just go ahead and declare a war against Antony. And in Octavian's mind, both of those are losses because the people won't be with him if he starts a war with Antony. He creates some kind of plan and asks to summon Attia and Octavia to dinner. Okay, now we cut to Attia out on a balcony. Antonia, Octavia's daughter, runs up, greets her. Very young, cute little thing. They go in, they enter the house. Attia asks if there's any letters for her. There isn't. Octavia's like, you got to stop asking for these letters. The letter's not coming. Go ahead, Cole.
I was momentarily surprised at Attia being like a good grandmother. But then I was like, no, wait, actually, like, I feel like that checks out. Like, I feel like when the grandkid comes around, there's always like a bit of a softening, at least like to the grandchild compared to how they are to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
They comment on this later on that Attia and Octavia almost kind of switch character traits in this episode. So I think that it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, they do say that. I still feel they act very true to character. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I guess in some ways they switch. So, yeah, Addie's expecting this letter. Octavia's like, because Addie is waiting for Antony to write. Because mm-hmm. Antony said that he promised to take Attia or send for her and bring her to Egypt. And it's been years and it hasn't happened. And Octavia's like, it's not happening. He's not sending for you. It's time to face the facts. And then they get informed they get summoned for dinner. And so we cut to that dinner. Things seem kind of tenuous and stressful right at the get-go. And Octavian pretty much cuts the chase. He's like, hey, Octavia, so you're like married to Antony, right? And he's like kind of holding up this grain. Would you go to Egypt and ask him to send us the grain? And Octavia is not a fan of this idea.
You must be joking.
Yeah, it's so funny.
My funniest line.
Yeah, this was also my funniest moment.
And Octavian responds, I can't remember the last time I told a joke. And Livia responds like, oh, no, I laughed at this thing you said last week. And Octavian's like, I was being metaphorical. Anyway, yeah. And so Octavia's like, you shouldn't send me. You should send Antony's real wife, Attia. And Octavian's like, well, I was actually thinking I'd send you both. That way, you know, we have like the actual love connection and like the figure or, you know, the image of the real connection. But Attia, surprisingly, although we just learned she's waiting fervently for any message from Antony, says no. She's like, I don't want to go. What's in it for me? And essentially, Attia's like, oh, maybe you gave me a new villa. And Octavian's like, okay, sure. And Attia's like, Octavia, what do you want? She's like, I don't know. Cash? And so Octavia says she'll take cash and the deal is struck. The two will go to Egypt. Cut to, wow, this is a lot.
Cuts immediately to something vile.
Yeah.
Hey, not vile, just rigorous.
I don't like that. I don't. Oh.
So let me cut you listeners into the loop here. We cut to our dear friend Octavian and his wife Livia engaged in sex, and there is a lot of action in this scene. I will not describe it super explicitly because suffice it to say, some very explicit things happen. There's a pause. Livia slaps Octavian a couple times. That seems to really work for him. So it's at this point, Livia just rolls off the top of Octavian and immediately goes into, I like birds. I don't like eggs. There's something quite sordid about eggs. And that devolves, and she goes on to interrogate Octavian on why he's sending Attia and Octavia to Egypt. Because she knows the reason that Octavian said, but she wants to know the real reason. And Octavian doesn't really say anything. Livia, very smart, very observantly. But she deduces it anyway. She's like, I know. It's because if you send them, Antony will refuse them, and that will humiliate Octavia, and the people of Rome will then be, like, angry at him. And if Attia gets there and he is still in love with her, you get what you want anyway. Uh-huh. Very wise.
Clever boy.
And Octavian seems fed up with talking, immediately rolls over, is like, good night, Livia, or whatever, and goes to bed. Cut to a boat. Adia is pacing back and forth around the lower deck. Octavia seems seasick. Adia's like, oh my god, will Anthony still like me? Octavia's like, of course he will. Adia's like, do you mean that? Octavia's like, no, of course he doesn't. He hasn't sent for you for years.
I also think Adia's that like, a lot of that is just Octavia like being seasick herself. She's just like, shut up.
She's very fed up with it, yeah. Adia goes on to say, you've become very mean, you know. Mean and bitter. And Octavia says, you've become girlish and sentimental. So that's what BP was alluding to earlier with the switching of the roles. Quite fun. We cut to a rousing game of sport. Young Caesarion is playing a game that involves throwing hard balls at a servant. He's winning. After pelting a woman several times, she runs off and he wants to play with Varinus. So Varinus plays with him. He tosses it very casually and Caesarion's like, no, actually play. And so Varinus winds one back and beams the kid. And this seems to be what Caesarion wanted because they play a little bit more catch. Caesarion asks about his father and Varinus tells him. He goes into like this small little diatribe and you can't really tell if he's truthfully describing Caesar, you know, Caesarion's believed father, or Titus Pollo, who Varinus knows is pretty much actually his real father.
I mean, I feel like you know which one he...
No, as it starts. Okay. As he gets closer to the end, there are details that come through. You're like, oh, this guy's talking about Pollo.
Okay.
He's like, oh, yeah, your father, he was a bad gambler, big eater, and he liked the women. And Caesarion's like, I heard he didn't really eat that much. And Varinus is like, oh, yeah, other people knew him better than I did. And so at this point, Posca comes running in. He's looking for someone. He's looking for Antony and Cleopatra because the boat is here. And we cut to Antony and Cleopatra in bed. Posca delivers the news that Antony's wife and lover are here. And Antony quickly has to be like, whoa, what's going on? But he kind of figures out.
He's also been smoking opium, so
yeah, I'm kind of impressed he was able to put all that together while he was like high out of his mind.
Yeah, and so he kind of quickly figures out the game at play. He knows why Octavian has sent them, and he like Cleopatra to get into it. Like, what are they gonna do? He's like, okay, I will of course refuse her, because I love you, Cleopatra. Antony will get the war that he wants because Octavian will start it, and Antony doesn't have to start it. But Antony doesn't really like how it's going to hurt how the people love him in Rome. He wants the people in Rome to still like him a lot. But Cleopatra's like, it doesn't matter as long as you win the war. And so Cleopatra gets up to like welcome their guests. And Antony kind of like doesn't like this. He's like, yo, you just want to flaunt our love in front of her. Cleopatra's like, why not? We love each other and you no longer love her. Why should she not know? Antony's like, she doesn't deserve humiliation. That's the point. Cleopatra's like, that's the point. That's why they're here. Octavian's trying to humiliate them. And Cleopatra's like, we should just kill them. She won't be humiliated. Antony again is like, people will, they'll hate me. I'll be a wife killer. And Antony further resists, blah, blah, blah. They get into quite the yelling match. Cleopatra starts throwing vases at him. They're going at it. Cut to the Egyptian docks. Attia and Octavia are being escorted on those palanquey things to the palace. As they get there, they nervously wait outside the door. Cut inside, Antony and Cleopatra are now physically fighting. Outside, Attia is complaining about the rudeness. I can't believe this door's been shut so long. It's very hot outside. Finally, Jocasta exits the door. They have a very...
place.
Yeah, a very fun little conversation. Jocasta's like talking about the hairstyles of Egypt. And then Posca finally comes out. He's like a little worried. He's like, Jocasta, what are you doing? Come back inside. Also, it was a pleasure to see you too. Strange interaction, Adia remarks. They've all gone insane. Inside, the fighting between Cleopatra and Antony has turned into quote-unquote fighting. Eventually, their loving act comes to an end, and the two stare at each other deeply, and they seem to have arrived at some kind of solution or plan. As Varinus enters, Antony says he has a delicate mission for him. Go ahead.
This just feels like another Tuesday for Antony and Cleopatra. I feel like they just seem like a couple that would just get into arguments and then just randomly just start having sex right after having the arguments.
Yeah, we definitely do get that vibe that this could be somewhat normal. Mm-hmm. And very much how Cleopatra functions. Winning arguments through seduction is kind of what this whole episode is building her character as. We cut to outside the door. Varinus exits with Egyptian shoulders, and he delivers the bad news. And the ladies don't take it well. Attia kind of like slaps him, pushes him, eventually falls to the ground sobbing, blah, blah, blah. They don't want to leave. Varinus is like, I'll make you leave via force. And then they eventually run off to the ship. Octavia leaves with the final note of telling Varinus to tell Antony, tell my husband he's cowardly scum, as they run back. Cut two, inside the palace, Jocasta and Posca are hurriedly packing, as it seems. They're trying to steal away onto the ship and go home. Varinus enters with a cough, stopping the two. Jocasta immediately is like, we just want to go home, please. And Posca's like, oh, she doesn't mean that. We're just going on a walk. But Varinus very kindly is like, well, if you want to see the ships at full sail, you should probably go now. So Varinus is cool with it. Excellent. Posca asks them to go with him, but Varinus is like, no, I have responsibilities here. But if you see Polo, ask him to kiss my children for me. And Posca and Jocasta scurry and make their way down to the docks. Inside the piece of floating wood, aka the boat, Attia is lying down and Octavia throws her ring to the sea, and Jocasta and Posca arrive and ask to stow away. Cut back into the palace. Caesarion is interrogating Varinus to know even more about his father. And then Antony enters pretty quickly, and Varinus informs them that he's done it. He's escorted the ladies away. Varinus relays Octavia's message of him being scum. And Antony wants to know what Varinus's opinion on the matter is. Varinus is like, well, I don't have an opinion. It's not my job to have an opinion. But eventually, through persistence, Antony's like, no, tell me what you think of the matter. And Varinus relents. He says, you're no coward, but you do have a strong disease in your soul, a disease that will eat away at you till you die. Hmm. And what is this disease? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. No. No, you're not. So how can you be so sure of your diagnosis? I recognize the symptoms. I have the same sickness.
That was so real.
Touching stuff from Varinus. Ay, ay, ay.
I also want to note that Antony walks into the scene literally wearing a dress, and no one addresses it. It's awesome. It rules.
Cut to Rome. Octavian is greeted with a slap from Attia. And Posca's there. What a pleasant surprise. Attia is a little upset that Octavian knew this was going to go down poorly.
She's annoyed that Octavian sent her on this mission knowing what would happen. I feel like everyone knew the score here except for Attia.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show how much, like, she really was in love with Antony, mm-hmm. and, like, believed that he was being truthful and honest to her. Like, Addie is usually a very smart and powerful woman, but this has all along been her one, like, Achilles heel.
That and spiting Servilia.
Yeah, that too. Attia is upset, but is now actually quite resolute in wanting Antony's destruction. It's like, forget about Mavilla, crush him and his queen. And it is then that Posca delivers to Octavian the last will and testament of Antony and Cleopatra, which is pretty damning stuff. It's like the perfect piece of evidence to win over the Roman people and make them think badly of Antony, because we learn that in the will, Antony wishes to be buried in Alexandria. He wants to will away his provinces and Egypt to his children born by Cleopatra, and give Caesarion, Cleopatra's child by Julius, quote unquote Julius Caesar, Rome and the East, and declare both of them living gods, Isis and Osiris, respectively. So, yikes, that's going to make people think that maybe Antony has switched sides.
He might be pretty pro-Egypt at this point. It's tough to say.
Yeah, suffice it to say. Cut two. Best character in the show, the newsreader delivering the news. Having rejected his loving wife Octavia, Mark Antony has coupled himself to the sorceress Cleopatra, promising her dominion on all Rome. He worships dogs and reptiles. He blackens his eyes with soot like a prostitute. He dances and plays the cymbals in vile Nilotic rites.
Now that we're like coming to the end of the show, I'm just like so happy that like despite like the years that have passed since the show started, the newsreader is like, he's made it through. He hasn't been murdered in all this chaos. And gotta say, he, like, it doesn't look like it's taking a toll on him. He has not aged a day, this newsreader.
Yeah, I actually just had this thought as I was talking. I hope this isn't his last scene. I hope he doesn't, like, need a fitting send off in the last episode, but I just hope we see him well.
Mm-hmm. Like, I just see him doing his thing.
Mm-hmm. Cut to Octavian delivering the same news to the Senate and essentially convincing them he is no longer a Roman, but an Egyptian, and we must fight and destroy him. And that is well heard. He received a standing ovation.
They're like, yeah, we love this guy that basically threatened to kill all of us a few years ago.
Yeah, at least an Egyptian. We cut to later in the Senate room. It's now empty. Octavian's in there. Pullo enters. Octavian is curious how Varinus is continuing to stand by Antony. And Octavian wants Pullo to come east with him. He figures since Pullo is close to Varinus, the two might be able to act as a mediator and prevent some bloodshed. But Octavian does relent. Some will have to die. Antony, of course, Caesarion, because since he's been declared putative king of Rome. But Cleopatra and her children by Antony might be able to live. And eventually Pullo agrees to come. He didn't really have a choice anyway, but they say it will be like old times, an adventure together.
That line felt very sweet, and I was like, wow, they have been friends for like a really long time. Like, Pullo might be like the only like genuine friend that Octavian has, and is like,
it did
at the very least, like, is the closest to like a father figure he's had that's been stable in his life.
Mm-hmm. It did make me feel very sentimental in a weirdly meta way, because like, yeah, they did go on adventures kind of in season one, and it all felt so pure and nice, and it just is what it is. And now everything's a mess. And that's like partially because the show is moving very quickly now in its second season, but also just because of the politics of Rome. And so it was kind of nice to be like, oh yeah, this is just like old times, and I did like old times.
Mm-hmm. It was so pure and nice. They killed a man. He took him to a brothel.
Yeah, you know. But, and, go ahead.
I was not done. Oh, just
sorry,
yet.
Sorry.
The I'm initial so thing. You're fine. The initial thing I wanted to hold up for was that when like Pullo actually like starts when he mentions like, oh yeah, the boy Caesarion will have to die, and Polo's like, are we sure? So it's like, okay, so Pullo is. He's pretty certain of that whole it being his kid thing. So he's like, I don't know about this whole my son being killed thing. Obviously, he doesn't say that, but.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, you're so right, Cole.
To add on to all this, something that I noticed as well is Octavian does a lot of his conversations with other people tend to kind of be for show and for political gain. I think Pullo is the only person that Octavian can just be himself around. And I think that's just shows just how good of a friendship they have.
Yeah. After this, we just cut to Varinus lying awake at night in Egypt. And
wait. Did we go the Pullo telling the children where he's going?
Oh, wait. I cut ahead in my own notes. My bad. Yes. Let's talk about that scene. Probably important. we cut to Pullo at home explaining the situation to the Varinus family. I'm going off to war. Lucius wants to come with. Pullo's like, no, obviously you can't, but I will likely see your father. Speaking of your father, he wants me to kiss you all, give you a kiss. He misses you. And he makes eye contact with Varina the elder and kind of is like, okay, maybe not there. And kisses Varina the younger and Lucius. And he's like, can I deliver a kiss from you guys in return? And Lucius is like, no, he killed our mother. And he shares a moment with Varina the Elder because she's obviously not a fan. And Pullo says, you're a hard one, you. She says, my father made me so. And he says, I hear you.
I'm so sad because I really feel like Lucius only like hates Varinus and believes all this just like because of Varina the Elder. Because like, look back at just like a few episodes prior, after Varinus gets the kids back and he's the head of the collegium, like you see like Varinus playing with him and just like having a good time, and like the kids having a blast. I don't think that kid would have been able to fake having fun with him. Like if he were intelligent enough to do that, a note of it would have been made in the past. Like, so he's entirely like, now that Varinus is gone, like I think Varinus kind of turned him on him, which is very sad.
Also, mm-hmm. Varinus had the chance to possibly kill him because honor would have made him do it, but he chose not to because he knows that's not what Niobe would have wanted.
Yeah, but when you're a child and you're alive, it's hard to think, oh, I'm so grateful for my dad not killing me. You're just like, this guy sucks. Varinus lies awake at night in Egypt. That's pretty much all there is to that scene. Sorry, can't go in more detail. Pullo, we cut back to him. He's giving rules to the members of Collegia that he's leaving behind, you know, make sure the place is running well.
Last episode, I made the observation, like, the only, like, captain I could remember outside of Varinus and Memmio was that old guy that, like, coughed so much I thought he was going to die.
He was still there.
Yeah, that guy's somehow still alive. I was blown away. That was all I wanted to say.
Yeah. In the bedroom, Gaia insists that if Pullo really loved her, he'd take her with him. And Pullo's like, I can't do that. Gaia's like, oh, I could handle my own, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't really acknowledge it that much. He doesn't really entertain this thought of Gaia coming. Gaia's like, don't forget your vinegar flask. Pullo grabs the vinegar flask. He leaves the room to go fill it. And while he's out in like the main area of the collegium, he notices something that disturbs him. We see him look up. We see him grab a knife on the table. And we see that the cage that once held the troll that is now Memeo has been jimmied open with the bone he was given earlier in the day. So Pullo, with knife in hand, kind of quickly, like, you know, is scouting the area, trying to find Memeo. And of course, Memeo comes up behind him and hits him with a wooden beam, knocking him out. And Memeo quickly grabs the knife that's on the ground, kneels over Pullo. He slaps him a couple times. He wants to wake him up so he really gets the satisfaction of killing him. Fortunately, that buys him just enough time for Gaia to come out and hit Memeo. They kind of go at it, tussle, and in the flurry, she kind of has him in like kind of headlock or something like that. She's behind him. She gets stabbed in the leg, turns around. They start fighting some more. She grabs a chalice to hit him with. She gets stabbed in the gut, but is finally able to like pin Memeo against the table and beat him with this chalice and kill him. But she has suffered some pretty grievous injuries. So we cut to Pullo and Gaia's bed, and Gaia is not doing well. She's covered in blood and like kind of convulsing even. Pullo sits bedside and is basically already mourning and asking God why he is punishing him again. Gaia's like, chill. You're not the one being punished. I'm dying right now. She goes even further to insist it is as it should be. I'm not a good woman. I haven't even been good to you, Pullo. Polo's like, no, you've been great to me. We've been good together. Gaia's like, now Irene was a good woman. Gaia says that she can't go to the afterlife with lies, meaning she's gonna tell Pullo what she did to Irene. That's what we know, so we're gonna see how Pullo takes this. So after sending away all the doctors, she tells Pullo what she did. That she, first she's like, remember, once I'm gone, that I did what I did out of love for you, Pullo. And she's like, yeah, I poisoned Irene, and I killed her and your baby. And that, Pullo kind of sits in shock for a second as the camera stays tight on his face. He doesn't emote. He doesn't move. But we do see his hand come up and brush Gaia's face, and then ever so casually grip around her neck. And then the other hand comes, and then the gripping gets really tight. Pullo is squeezing very, very hard as he can around Gaia's throat, and eventually she dies. And when she does, Pullo lets out an exasperated gasp, kind of half incredulous about what he has done, half incredulous about what Gaia has done, and a third half incredulous about what he has once again lost by doing this. Yikes. Ooh.
Yes, I know it's violent, but also I was glad that Pullo finally got to find out and get his revenge. Like I said in the previous episode, Irene made him a better man, and she did not deserve to go out like that. So yeah, Pullo. Sorry, Kay. I had to say it.
Now it's going to sound much worse in the edit.
Pullo carries the body through the streets and tosses Gaia into the river. Might have been a pond. It looks like a river. I thought I saw a water wheel.
I mean, they're on the Aventine, right? Like, which is a river.
Mm-hmm. And he looks on indignantly as Gaia's body floats there in the weeds. And with that, we cut to the credits. That is the end of Deus Impeditio Esseritori Nullus. No God can stop a hungry man.
I love the way the shot looks on Gaia's body in the water. I think that it looks very cool. Also, I just love that Pullo, just because of just how pissed off he is, he just throws her like he is just throwing out a bag of trash out onto the street.
I don't have a citation on this, but part of me thinks that to just throw someone's body in the water is an insult and will affect their afterlife, because a proper Roman burial is a cremation, apparently. I don't know my stats on that, but maybe
she
eternally drowns. Yeah. I re-listened to our season one Egypt episode today, and I was kind of surprised to learn that, you know, when Cleopatra and Polo consummated their relationship, that Polo was dating Irene at the time. Like, I had totally forgotten about that. So apparently Guy wasn't the first woman he cheated on her with.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Was it a good episode, though?
It was great.
A good episode.
Excellent.
I don't know why I forgot to note this earlier, and I think I noted this in the first time we went to Egypt. The way they make Egypt look, it looks nice. It looks very beautiful production.
Not Adia's.
Yeah,
Adia, like, hates that place.
Okay, guys, I just want a little vibe check from everybody. We have one episode left of the whole series. Just a quick, how do you feel going in, and do you think the show is going to stick the landing?
The pace of things is very apparent. I mean, like, it feels... I liked this episode. I like what Rome has done so far this season. I do genuinely wish they had a little bit more time to sit in things and play with things, because things are moving fast. And sometimes I think that makes certain emotional payoffs not hit as hard. Like, for example, the scene we just saw close on Gaia's death. Like, if we had more time with Gaia being a significant character, that is a lot more significant. But, like, we met Gaia this season. Gaia hasn't been important to the plot for all but, like, 3 or 4 episodes. And so, like, we get it's important, but it doesn't hit as hard as it could otherwise. I think it'll probably stick the landing in a fine way. I don't think it'll be terrible, but I like it so far. Do wish it had more time.
Well said.
Much like what Jacob said with pacing, I really felt the faster rushing to the finish line with this episode, because what I'm beginning to notice is I feel like the previous episode, if they did not get canceled, would have been the season 2 finale, with a couple other episodes filled in somewhere in the middle of the season. And this entire episode arguably would have been the entire arc of season 3, or at least a good chunk of season 3's arc. And
I see what you're saying, BP. Yeah.
And so I think that we're just kind of getting the condensed version of what season 3 would have been, because I believe the production crew, from what I've read online, said that seasons 3 and 4 were what they tried to get pushed into here. And so I think this episode is like the season 3 arc, and the next episode will be the season 4 arc condensed.
Yeah.
Cool.
I am cautiously optimistic about the finale. I'm hopeful that it'll stick the landing, but I'm nervous because I'm gonna be blunt. I hated this episode.
No way.
Really?
Yeah. And it's entirely because of like all the pacing stuff. And I understand like the show got canceled. They had to fit it in where they could, do the best they could. I get that, but just like all of the stuff with Gaia, I'm like, this feels like her being killed should not be as satisfying as I want it to be. Like, I feel like we should have had more time as her whole thing with like being in love with Polo and everything, just to like make that hit. But no, I was still like, yeah, no, I'm about this. Also, like her thing about where she's like, I did it because I loved you. She didn't. She did it because she didn't like Rennie.
Yeah, and it would very much seem like she lusted for Polo at best.
Yeah.
Love very strong.
And
Or any of the top three dogs.
Exactly.
Aventine. Mm-hmm.
Like a week ago, you had feelings for Marina's Gaia. Chill.
Yeah.
Well, Cole, I appreciate your blunt honesty there. I look forward to what we're going to talk about here. But Cole and BP, here's what you guys will talk about in your breakout room. And Jacob, when we talk about history, you'll just have to come in a little, maybe improv-ing a little bit more. I hope you have a background in that. But Cole and BP and Jacob, what are two things you think are going to happen in the final episode? This could be character actions, outcomes, what have you, but I need to hear two unique things from everybody. So I want to hear 6 different answers, or just 6 different possibilities you are confident will happen in total. And I know a lot of you guys have been making predictions about the outcomes of certain characters here. So if you want to evenly split those, I recommend doing that. Okay. Okay, Jacob. God bless. You made me just remember how much, I don't know, many years are covered here, and like that kind of is reflected in the amount of history
that
stuff
I
have
was
to talk
to
about.
Say, like, well, we've progressed at least 3 years, so some things have certainly happened. What strikes me right off the bat? Well, Antony, let's just go through some factual things. Antony did have children with Cleopatra. That is certain. The will, as far as I can recall, is pretty solid, as what I remember it being.
Yep. Will fiasco occurred.
I feel like I remember something to the effects of Antony's wife being sent to Egypt. I can't remember how that went, but I feel like I recall that occurring.
Yeah, Octavia was sent to mediate things and was spurned by Antony, which gave Octavian some pretext. I'll talk a little more detail later, but you are correct there. Jacob, Antony took a massive L in history that was not covered at all this episode, completely glossed over. Do you recall that?
Yeah, we talked about it last episode, right? No, we're not there yet. They're not warring yet. I'm so silly. What L did he take? I was thinking about the Battle of Actium.
It was a war. It was a war. It was separate from Battle of Actium, though.
Oh, he was, like, engaged in some, like, battles with non-Romans, right?
Exactly. Yes. He went to invade Parthia and just completely failed. Got a lot of people killed, a lot of money wasted. So it skipped this episode, but Antony was actually on a bit of a political decline as Octavian's hitting this ascension.
Yeah, I think I probably got all the real quick facts I wanted to mention. So you can go into your spiel.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This is going to be a bit of a lecture here. So the Roman grain shipments being an issue, of course, as we've often said this whole season, Antony is not necessarily behind the grain issue. It is Sextus Pompey, who doesn't exist in the show. But Octavian and Agrippa finally defeated him. And after this victory, Octavian strips Lepidus of his power, essentially cutting him out officially. And so this is where I think the show really diverges from history, because Antony wasn't refusing to send grain to Octavian to incite an uprising. And you have to remember, historically, Antony's on the downswing. Octavian's on the upswing, though, racking up W's. Octavian also needs to pay back Antony for aiding him against Sextus Pompey, so he sends Octavia back to Antony with some gifts. But the thing is, he cheaped out. He didn't give Antony everything he owed. So if Antony accepts Octavian and all the gifts, Octavian will say they're made whole. If Antony refuses the gifts, then Octavian gets a PR win, and that's what happens. He sends Octavia away in Athens, not Alexandria, and also they do not immediately go to war over this. It's still a few years out. There's a lot here. Octavian doesn't make a move on Antony. He goes to war with the Dacians. He rehabilitates his public image in Rome, and that's when they start belittling each other, because Octavian's on the upswing. He has the advantage. He is actually in Rome and improving life that the people can see. Antony had already declared war on Octavian by the time Octavian had learned of the will from a defector. And so the will wasn't taken from Alexandria to Rome. It was always in Rome, actually. The defector just told Octavian what was inside. So Octavian illegally took it out of a temple. And the contents of the will are a little bit different. In real life, the things that incited people against Antony was that Antony's will stated he wanted some of his money to go to his Egyptian children with Cleopatra. And what was really horrible is that he wanted to be buried in Egypt. The thing about wanting to give his Egyptian children Roman lands, that was actually kind of publicized already in this thing called the Donations of Alexandria, where Antony and Cleopatra call themselves gods, and they give, in name only, Roman territory to Caesarion, Alexander Helios, Cleopatra Selene, Ptolemy Philadelphus, the children, the infant Egyptian children, essentially. And again, this was in name only, and it was a very weird strategy, but if you find this Historia Civilis video on YouTube, he kind of explains Antony's rationale that the East was so destabilized, having a dynasty in Rome's pocket is actually not a bad idea to stabilize things out, because Pompey and Brutus and Antony had been screwing things up there so much. So I've been talking so much. Last thing, Octavia had two children by Antony, not just the one. But that's all the history I could think of to cover in this episode. But
are Antony and Octavian co-consul at this whole time, or are they still kind of just pulling the strings from like the back, and they have like consuls that they are have been like putting in power?
Yeah, the consulship essentially means nothing because their triumvir powers supersedes that essentially. So yeah, that's what they got going on. But I mean, just for reference here, okay, so Philippi episode was that episode 7 or episode 6?
I don't know.
Okay, that was episode 6. So these final four episodes of Rome take place over 10 years. So that's why we just got to do a lot of cutting across time, I guess. But Cole, hit me with one thing you are confident will happen in the final episode.
I think there's going to be some kind of reconciliation between Varinus and his kids. I feel like we got to have that before the show's over.
Okay, okay. Well said. BP, tell me one thing you're sure will happen.
Given I saw on Max the title of the next episode is called About Your Father, I think Caesarion is going to find out who Papa Bear truly is, a.k.a. Polo.
Cole, your last one?
I think, I don't know how Mark Antony dies in history, but I think Varinus is going to have a part to play in his death. I don't know in what capacity, I just think he's going to somehow be involved.
Okay, and BP, final point?
I think that just from contextual history that I know, I think that Cleopatra is going to commit suicide.
Okie doke. Jacob, now you, those four are off the table. Tell me two things you think will happen.
I'm good. I think that Varinus and Polo will get a happy ending, and they will finally retire to some kind of respectable living that makes them both happy, probably together, working together as the close brothers they are. And I think that Attia might kill herself. I don't know. Something bad's gonna happen to Attia. Like it's curse. Due. You know, she's been following this Antony train for so while, and she's kind of not been. She has not been motherly or like really accepting of Octavian as like her son for a while now.
Okay.
Pretty like not happy with his acts. So I think she doesn't really. Even if Octavian wins and defeats Antony, she doesn't have a path to go down, and maybe she just like dies unceremoniously.
Okay. Wow. I if we have more time, I might want to hear some more guesses from you guys, because that was fun. That was fun. Okay, guys. We'll go ahead and move into least favorite moments of the episode, if anyone had any.
Okay. Jacob, I apologize in advance.
Oh, no?
My least favorite scene is just Cleopatra.
Oh.
I was not, like, a fan of her this episode. Like, I feel like a last season and like early this season in like the one episode she was there, like I was like, okay, like she seems like kind of weird, but like she seems like a smart lady, but like she just seemed like an angry 10-year-old like the entire episode. Like when she's like going, like she takes the bow and arrow to like try with the guy dressed up as the deer, and like she just whiffs it super hard, and she's like, hey, move, like, blah. It's like, and it's like he clearly didn't, and even if he did, you were like 5 feet off. And then like later on, like when she and Antony are having that spat where she just like super like pettily wants to like show like her and Antony being in love, which that didn't bother me as much because like that feels like par for the course for the show. But then when she's like, we should just kill them, and I'm like, that's a terrible idea, and it feels super out of character that you would even contemplate that. Like, I was like,
does that feel out of character? Like, this is only I forget this. It's like Cleopatra is only in 4 episodes, 5 maybe technically of the series. So I guess maybe we just don't know her that well. Like, I don't know. I'm maybe playing devil's advocate.
My thought here is like that she has portrayed herself outside of this episode to be smart enough that like she would understand that that is a terrible plan. But she seems to just like not really care about that here, which I thought was weird.
I can see your point of Cleopatra. She does act childish. I do like this episode, how it characterizes how Cleopatra functions strategically, though. Like during that whole interaction with Mark Antony, when they're like very obviously disagreeing and at odds with one another, they're like constantly halfway making out, and like Cleopatra is very much in control. And like, it, I don't know, it does go with the historical depiction of Cleopatra that, like, you know, she used her feminine wiles to get what she wanted, and whether or not that's true is disputed. But it's portrayed well because we see that, like, oh, even though they're fighting, they eventually start loving, to put it one way. And Cleopatra basically gets what she wants. But I do see where you're coming from with the, like, kind of childish behavior.
I side with a lot of what Jacob said, because I know you and I kind of talked about it briefly in the breakout room. I just think that the way Cleopatra acts, it partially is for show, the way she acting super childish, and also I think for how much she smokes and for how high she is a lot of the time, I'm not surprised she acts this way.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and share my least favorite moments. I'm sorry to pull this card here, but the Livia Octavian sex scene to me just felt like real grimy HBO sexploitation scene, I guess. And like, it was kind of, I don't know, I just felt like I needed a shower. And I also I want to note this, like, it's basically impossible to know the true relationship that Livia had with Octavian, but I think this show is like giving credence to the theory that Livia manipulated Octavian's politics, because when Livia's talking about how she doesn't like eggs, she says, "We're not going to serve him anymore." It's like after she's in this like sexually dominant position, she then calls the shots, basically. Whereas I prefer the historical interpretation that they're more equal partners and Livia's like a knowledgeable mob wife. Also, Gaia and Polo. Gaia living for years with Polo in blissful ignorance off screen, and then admitting on her deathbed she killed Eleni, and is then surprised when Polo chokes her to death, does not improve with the second viewing.
Mm-hmm.
How about favorite moments, guys?
My favorite moment, and it's not even for like a vindictive revenge reason, is when Polo kills Gaia. I guess this has just been the theme for me this whole season, but the emotion behind the acting, I think, is very good.
He's channeling Greenus.
But because like his face is so sullen and unemotive, like as he comes to terms with what Gaia has said, and it's just like this subtle change in his face, like the muscles in his face tighten and everything just ever so slightly like turns downward, like his eyebrows and his mouths, and he's just like squeezing as hard as he can. And it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm looking too much into it, but like that's great acting, because it doesn't look like you're doing anything, but you can read that the doing nothing is something. And I was like, this is crazy. And yeah, then he lets out the exasperated gasp afterwards, and it tells so much. And also Gaia dies, and she probably did deserve to die. And yeah, you know, I am happy she's dead. So that's my favorite part.
Mine's real short. Jocasta coming out and greeting Adia and Octavia and giving them the skinny of what Antony's life has been like in Egypt. And it just made me so sad that Jocasta was born in the wrong time period. She would have thrived in Pride and Prejudice, but love her so much.
My favorite scene is honestly the scene where Varinus is with Caesarion and he's tossing the ball around. Oh, yeah. Because in kind of a reverse way, Polo is getting to be a father figure for Varinus's children, and even though not very many people know that Polo is the true father of Caesarion, Varinus kind of gets to be a father figure for Caesarion in this moment. And also, I just like that even though Caesarion is asking about Caesar, Varinus is doing everything he possibly can to describe Polo, because he knows what happened in the tent that night. And I think that it's just a nice moment for Varinus to finally kind of open up with his thoughts about Varinus, because I don't know if he is somebody that ever really likes to express his feelings towards other people, about other people specifically, when it's more personal rather than professional. And it was just a nice moment. I think Varinus finally got to kind of express the truth of how he felt about Varinus. He is a good man, good soldier. Yeah, he was a bad gambler and he loved his women, but I love him.
I agree. That was very well said, BP. Love that scene.
Yeah, that was a contender for my favorite scene. I will say, though, I do think the him transitioning into talking about Polo was not intentional. Like, it wasn't like a,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like, I wanted the truth. Like, I think that was totally an accident.
Mm-hmm. I always thought he was just doing it knowingly on purpose. Mm-hmm. How about you, though, Cole? Favorite scene?
My favorite scene is that final scene between Varinus and Antony, where he's like, yeah, you've got that, like, sickness in your soul. Like, it's just, like, it feels like it's, like, such a vulnerable moment for both of them, where he's like, it feels like Antony looks at Varinus like the same way Octavian looks at Polo, where he's like, this is like the one guy I can trust to like be a friend, even if it's like not in the same way that Octavian looks at Polo. So he's like, yeah, no, like, tell me honestly what you think. And he does, and he's like, and I also like have this like sickness that is killing me. And it's just like it was such a great like scene that felt like it was like them like connecting on like an emotional level, like even if like they disagree with one another.
And it was so good for me because it made me think about like character parallels, right? Because I think in a lot of ways, a lot of the characters we see in Rome are the same. They just exist in different social castes. And like Varinus and Antony definitely do have like a lot of differences, right? Varinus is very moral and upstanding, and he wouldn't do a lot of the things Antony would do, but he does have a kind of temper that's similar to Antony's. His isn't born out of like cockiness or anything, but born out of, I don't know, just rage. And yeah, it's very powerful for Varinus to be like, oh yeah, I have this awful thing wrong with me, and I see it in you, and you're right. It's just vulnerable, and it's great, and it rules.
It also shows that, I mean, I don't know, Antony just might be the most gray character of the show, because for all his cruelty, there's like still, he always just has a little spark of humanity left in him, which makes his tough actions tougher to watch, maybe.
Yeah, that's so true. I didn't mean to say that, because like Antony a lot of times would punish someone for saying something like that, but here he's just like is totally okay with leveling with Varinus and hearing what he has to say.
That might just be the I can fix him in all of us, though.
I mean, I will say like some of the most entertaining monsters are the ones you can see the man behind at times.
Very true. Well said. Wow.
Well, folks, if you would like to learn more about the real history behind this episode, you can listen to Death of the Roman Republic, Chapter 17, Successes and Failures of Antony and Octavian, as well as half of Chapter 18, Antony, Octavian, and Actium. This episode covered a lot of history. Who else has something to promote?
You can follow me on X at BP Movie Review Hour and on Letterboxd BP Movie Review Hour. Follow my podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It's a fun time.
This week, I challenge you to write a story about a leaf. Let the leaf feel emotion and tell us the journey it takes.
I just want to say that our dear audience members, if over the past few weeks that for you guys that this has been happening, if any time Jacob starts saying stuff, you're like, what is this guy talking about? I'm in the same boat. I have no clue what nonsense he's on. So I just want to say, you're not alone, audience. I am with you.
I think Jacob's just been taking creative writing classes at his local community college or something.
I think Jacob's been taking drugs.
He's wearing a beret. I'm doing pottery.
Oh, with all that being said, and it pains me to say this for the penultimate time, friends, Romans, countrymen, I hope you enjoyed the show.
All right. Well done, Jacob. Thank you for leading us through that. As I said, if anyone wants to shout out some any more random theories, that was really fun hearing what you guys thought would occur. I suppose I want
to go. I did have one more. I was trying to spitball a few just because I was like, I can't have Jacob snipe these from me.
Scooped.
So I thought of it was an obvious one that just didn't end up making the cut because it wasn't as interesting to me. Octavian becoming emperor. I feel like that's probably going to happen next episode.
Okay.
I think Pasca and Dracassa, I think both of them are going to just find a way to come out of this more unscathed compared to other characters in this situation specifically with like Rome and Egypt.
We discussed that in the breakout room. And I came out from a disagreement because I said overall, Pasca has made it through this series like pretty unscathed. Like about the worst things that have happened to him is like Caesar died and like they were like pretty good friends and like that sucked. And also he has to work for Antony, which isn't great from what we've seen from him, but like nothing like super like tragic has happened to Pasca, and like nothing Like, nobody can make it through the show without trauma, so I feel like he's due for something.
All right, Jacob, quick.
I think Tymon's gone. I don't think we're going to see Tymon again.
Yeah.
I think it was his goodbye last episode. Sad Tymon hours.
You know, maybe he'll be around for the birth of Christ. That'll be cool.
Well, speaking of goodbyes, fellas, I will see you. Shoot. Maybe Monday next week. I don't know. Text. I'll text.
That'll work for me.
I can do Monday.
All right. See you.
Sayonara.